You can't start the car. Johnny has the keys.
Very Lynchian feel.
I thought you were just being experimental and trying to do something different.
Did you like the style that he chose?
Convenient storytelling.
It is a check your brain at the door movie.
I don't think he lets things like continuity bother him.
This entire cast is great.
This sucks. I'm not watching this again. Why didn't he get with us? Because we always know how to fix these things.
So we can just jump into a car and drive to the mythical monster city?
That makes my gaydar ping a little bit.
It scared the crap out of me. Of course, a smile in general is creepy to me. It's like British children.
I'm telling you, them hobbits are gay. And that's why folks tune back in, because I know how to poke the bear.
You're the warrior. You've got to go into the horrible forest that's scary and terrifying, and you've got to kill the monster and rescue the princess.
That's Mario.
Hello and welcome out there in podcast and YouTube land. You have reached Johnny Has the Keys, a podcast and YouTube channel where we talk about horror movies, science fiction movies, key elements that influence the topic of the week, hence that imaginative title that we have, and then things that that topic may have influenced going forward. We've been doing it for quite a few years now. We have a whole plethora of episodes that you can check out down below. If you're new to us, we'd love for you to check them out. We'd also love to hear from you. How did you find out about us? What linked you to this fantabulous multiverse that is out there called Johnny Has the Keys? We're unscripted, so you might hear some flubs, some craziness, some whatever. We just prefer the dialogue and the conversation. Sometimes we don't even know what we're going to say ourselves, let alone what the other person is going to say. Speaking of other person, here with my other person, Tim. Tim, how's your week been? What have you been doing? What's good with you?
You had a TIA, didn't you?
A what?
You had a TIA, didn't you?
What's a TIA?
It's one of those little mini strokes that you're unaware of.
I probably have a bunch of those. Yeah. If I'm unaware of it, how would I ever know, Tim?
I don't know, but you did some weirdness at the very beginning. It was kind of funny.
Oh, okay.
You're like bouncing around.
That's all right. Yeah, because I was trying to remember a podcast. What is this we're doing? Is it a video? No, it's not a video. It's a podcast.
He just had a stroke.
Yeah. I've had several, but this was the more important one.
Yeah, oh, my goodness. Wow. Welcome. Yeah. Like you said, we're back on, what is this, the fifth episode of the season?
Yeah.
Our first double feature. But before we get into that, we usually break the ice with a little genre topic of something that we might have seen or recently. And I finally got around to seeing a little movie called The Substance.
Oh, that's the Demi Moore one, right?
It is. It is. I loved this movie. It is extremely original, and I can see why it was nominated for Best Picture. It's kind of like a fantasy horror picture hybrid, only less period piece like Del Toro and more modern. Does that make sense?
Okay.
I guarantee you David Cronenberg was jealous when he saw this movie.
Damn, why didn't I do that?
Right. Not only is it body horror, it's just so damn well done. It's horror, it's satire, and at times it's laugh out loud funny.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. So I think a lot of, if you read up on it, I want to say it's sometimes billed as a dark comedy, like on IMDb or whatever. It's written and directed by, and you're going to love this, Cora Lee Fargeat, F-A-R-G-E-A-T.
Okay.
Corley, you are very familiar with her.
I am? What? I am?
Yes. She directed a movie you and I talked about several years ago on here called Revenge.
Oh, the Australian one?
Yes.
Yeah, I love that movie.
Okay. Well, she wrote and directed this one too.
Okay.
As soon as I saw that, I was like, okay, no wonder this movie's so good. Because that movie was crazy. It was good, a little crazy, but good.
Yeah.
The cast one in this one, of course, is excellent. Demi Moore was the lead. She was nominated for an Oscar for this role. Mm-hmm. But however, it has Dennis Quaid in it, and he is excellent in it, and Margaret Qualley. Dennis Quaid is, I guess you'd say he's the bad guy. He's definitely the smarmy producer-like guy that was wanting to get rid of Demi because she's older and wants to bring in a new younger person, that kind of character.
Okay.
A synopsis is Elizabeth Sparkle is a fading celebrity who uses a black market cell replicating drug to create a younger, better version of herself named Sue. And that's who Margaret Qualley is. She's very pretty girl. I mentioned her because she's one of the leads. I don't know anything else that she's done, though. The movie gets 89% on Rotten Tomatoes. It is well-deserved. I might even give it higher. Fargate, if I am saying that right, has a style that is extremely distinct and could easily become known for it as a name director, I think.
Okay.
I thoroughly enjoyed this movie, and I think you would too.
So. Excellent. It's on my list. I've wanted to see it, so I'll end up seeing it eventually. Yeah, okay, so The Substance.
That's what I did in my genre week.
Well, ironically, speaking of my list, I did a movie that has been on my list for a while, and I haven't had a chance, and I finally did, but it is a fairly recent, came out early last year in 25, and it was an Apple TV Plus original, so they produced and everything else, and it's called The Gorge.
It's got one of those women in it I like a lot.
Anya Taylor-Joy, the lead, yes. Miles Teller, and Sigourney Weaver. And they're basically the only three in the entire movie.
Okay.
There are other characters, but they're basically soldiers or backgrounds or whatever, anything else. You would probably like this movie a lot because it is directed by Scott Derrickson.
Oh, yeah.
Who did
Black Phone.
Black Phone, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's written by Zach Dean. He is not as good as Scott, so it's very well directed. Not the best script in places. There are things that don't work. Basically, the story, in case you don't know it, is there are two operatives, one from the United States, one essentially from the Soviet, or from Russia. I think she's actually from Ukraine or Belgravia, somewhere like that. Anyway, both of them are kind of among the spook set, both of them are international snipers. They are amazingly good, very adept, great kill rates, all this kind of stuff. We follow Miles' character as, I'm trying to remember his name now. Let me check my notes. Levi. So we follow Levi as he's suddenly picked up on a job, taken, whisked off by the Black Ops into this office tower where he meets Sigourney Weaver. And she goes, do you know who I am? And he goes, no, but I'm assuming based on the way I got here, you're some upper level spook that I don't need to know who you are. She goes, basically, yeah. So anyway, she hires him and he finds out in this part of the world that they never say where it is, but more likely Europe somewhere. There's this huge gorge that goes down hundreds of feet into the ground. It is shrouded in fog 24/7. You can never see into the gorge. On one side of it is this huge tower that was built in the 1950s. On the other side of it is another tower. One side is on the European-controlled side. The other side is in Russia. So you assume it's in Europe somewhere, just don't know where. All along this gorge for miles and miles are cloaking devices, are cloaking towers that keep it so that Google Earth and everything else doesn't even know it's there. Also, there's huge perimeter mines, 50 caliber machine guns, all this kind of stuff. He basically is parachuted in here and told to go talk to the guy who's there. The guy who's there says, oh, thank God you're here, right on time, blah, blah, blah. They do one-year rotations in this area. You are solo. You're there for a year by yourself, protecting the gorge. He finally asked the guy, so what? We're supposed to make sure nobody gets in here and finds out about this. He goes, oh, no, you're here to make sure what's in the gorge doesn't get out. They go, and he goes, kind of, okay. The guy takes off. A few minutes later, it shows him, Levi doesn't know this, but he's picked up by the helicopter and then he's dropped and killed. So you only serve one term here, but Levi doesn't know that. Anyway, after a few weeks, he notices that there's another person in the tower across from his, in the Soviet tower, or the Russian tower. And all this is all Cold War technology stuff. Anyway, it turns out to be the sniper. And the whole movie is about them developing a relationship together. You are literally a mile away across this gorge. How do you communicate and everything? It's very interesting. They end up, of course, getting into the gorge at some point. I don't want to give away because I really think you would like this movie a lot. I did. I thought it was really good. Some great scares, some great design, really good direction. He directs it very well. There's some lapses in the third act of that doesn't make any sense how that would work. But hey, we'll just go with it because it's really good action and we're watching it.
Barbarian. So. I can say the same thing about that.
Oh, okay. But Scott Derrickson has a really good way of he's got a really good style of character development. You know what I mean? That was one of the things I remember in Black Phone I liked a lot. There wasn't a lot of dialogue to set up these characters, but we really liked them and kind of saw them really clearly, really quickly.
Yeah, he did Doctor Strange too for Marvel.
The second one?
No, the first one.
Oh, he directed Raimi the first
did the
one?
Second one.
Okay, okay.
Yeah.
So, yeah, really good at character and character work. And I would recommend it. The Gorge came out in 25. It's on Apple TV. You can probably find it other places now.
But wow. Okay.
The Gorge. Kind of scary.
Yeah. And that brings us to today's double feature, which basically, when it hit the earth, left a little bit of a gorge, and there was definitely a substance inside it.
There you go.
And we are talking, and this has been on my list for us to do for a while. And I finally said, you know what? We haven't done Lovecraft in a while, so let's do this. I don't think we've done it since maybe Reanimator.
Probably.
And that's been several years ago. We're doing two films based on H.P. Lovecraft's The Color Out of Space.
Look at this.
All those years in the big city, we finally got out. We're living the dream.
Maybe it is a dream.
Then everything just blew up. Big flash, like a pink light. Or actually, I don't even know what color it was. It wasn't like any color I'd ever seen before. It
looks like a meteorite. I mean, it's radioactive. I mean, it's from space, right?
Meteorites are generally no more dangerous than ordinary rocks.
How can something that big just disappear? Did you plant those?
No.
Ward, you come here for a sec.
Oh, God.
What are you doing?
Shh. It's talking to me.
Who's talking to you?
It's in the static, it's in the moisture. It's in here, it's out there. And what's out there is in here now.
Everything's under control.
Why are you so in denial? That ding from the meteorite changes everything around it.
It's just a color. No! But it burns.
Can you believe me now?
I don't know what I believe anymore. Everything's gonna be A-okay.
One of these is called The Color Out of Space, and the other is just called Color Out of Space, if you're trying to distinguish them. One was directed or made in 2010, one was made in 2019, one is German, one is American. So we've got a lot going on here.
And in Germany, I think it was released just as The Color.
It's called Die Farbe.
Yeah, Die Farbe.
Which means the frame. I think that translates to the frame in German.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And because I wondered why they called it that. And I guess when it came over here, they changed it to the correct title or the original. Right. We're going to talk about Die Farbe or The Color Out of Space 2010 first. And a brief synopsis, searching for his missing father, Jonathan travels to rural to a rural German village. A local, Armin, tells him a chilling story about a farmer, Nahum Gartner, and his family. Years earlier, a meteorite crashed near their farm. It began shrinking while emitting an alien, sickening color. The color slowly poisoned the land, mutated the local crops, animals, and the Gartner family. Nathan's wife went mad and was locked in the attic, while his sons grew catatonic and vanished into the well. The color eventually consumes the farm entirely, killing the father before breaking free and escaping into space. Now, it's leaving a little bit out, that little synopsis I read, because this is a story within a story. We've got the American going back looking for his father, who saw this when he was in, or witnessed some of this when he was in World War II as a medic. But then we've got the actual, another little story going back into the 30s where the meteor actually hit, and we see the scientists dealing with it at the time. So there's really three different time periods in this. There's 1975, there's like 1945 and 1930, I believe, if I'm definitely in that area of time frame. Before I keep going with a little bit of production, had you ever seen or heard of this movie or know anything about it?
I'd heard of the title just because I like H.P. Lovecraft. So I've read almost all of his works and short essays and everything else. So I was familiar with the title itself, but I had not seen either one of these, the 10 or the 16.
Okay.
Or 26.
It's 10 and 19.
10 and 19. Yeah. And I actually ended up overall liking both of them. I think both of them have their issues. I think it's very interesting. It's like, grandma made some cornbread and my other grandma made some cornbread. So which cornbread do you like? I like the crust on this one, and I like the spices she added to this one, kind of thing, because I do think each of them have some really cool stuff to them, both from a science fiction and from a horror angle, but also both of them have some issues, some things that don't work. And both of them are, I would end up having to say, pretty good adaptations of the story.
I think this one, the 2010, is much more faithful to the story than the 2019.
It is, but you can see all of the elements are still there in the 2019 one. You are, except you don't have someone telling, you don't have the third person telling. So the short story is like the 10 version. The short story is a surveyor who wants to know why this place is called the Blasted Heath. And he finds this local who says, let me tell you the story. So right. He tells him the whole story of what happened. And not only with the family that's there now, but the meteorite when it first came to the family's farm. And then at the end, because in the story, the surveyor then goes out there and he basically sees the whole burst of it going into space, but part of it lands back in the well, and he kind of goes crazy too. So this one, the 2010 one, I think is the more faithful adaptation of it.
I went back and reread the story after watching both of them, and there's mm-hmm. more things in the story that happen in this film than in the second film.
Correct. For sure. The second film spends a lot of time with the daughter, a lot of mm-hmm. time with our little hippie living in the woods thing. And I guess he's supposed to be the Pierska kind of, I'm telling you the story, because he's the one that does explain it all in that videotape, audio tape at the end. But yeah, but there's still the well. There's still mom is crazy. There's still, it starts affecting all the plants. They get big, but then you can't eat them. So a lot of the same things are there, but it's
We'll get into it when we get to that film. But the 2019 one to me is a little bit of that territorial pissing where I'm like, why are you changing things? Why don't you just do the damn story?
Yeah, true.
I mean, true. This one, they felt inclined to do the World War II thing, unless they're just clearly they were trying to get it back in time a little, because by setting it in 1975, you didn't have cell phones and things like that. So
why would you change not only the time frame but also the location? Because Lovecraft is so known for Massachusetts, Pennsylvania, that whole New England. That is to him what Derry and everything else is to King.
To Stephen King, yeah.
So agreed. Why would you do that? Other than the director's German.
And they said it in Germany because he couldn't afford to film on location. I don't know. It doesn't look like anywhere but outside.
Yeah.
It doesn't.
Yeah. Although I will say there's a lot of things. He definitely works a lot better once he has the little farmhouse location and everything. All the opening stuff in this is awful. It looks like a bad student film and with CGI backgrounds that are no worse than these behind us. Right now, they're no better than what we have.
I didn't even notice the CGI. I did notice that the acting, even though they're speaking, some of it's spoken, some of it's subtitled, and some of it's dubbed. And the dub stuff looks really bad.
Yeah. And all the stuff at the beginning when they're in America and in Massachusetts, because it's not Miskatonic, but it's another university. But all of those are like bad CGI single backgrounds for the library, okay, for his house, for when he's traveling. Once he finally gets to the village and gets inside, starts, have you seen my father? Have you seen my father? Oh, let's meet this guy and tell me the story. And then all the stuff in the past is pretty good.
Yeah. The director's name is Juan Vu. And he also wrote this adaptation as well as directed it. He is of Vietnamese descent. However, his parents moved to Germany when he was little, or he was born in Germany. One, he may be second generation.
Okay.
And I honestly, he hasn't done anything else, really. Not much. Like maybe a TV series in Germany or something, an episode. And I wish he would do something else. I think he did a good job with this for the amount of money he probably had.
Yeah. There's one of my keys for this is Evil Dead, because there's a lot of really cool photography that makes you afraid, especially when he gets to the house and starts looking for the family members.
We'll get to it when we get to keys. I have Evil Dead for both films because there are instances in both films that remind me of the Evil Dead.
Definitely.
But back to this.
Huge key.
If you go on IMDb, there's hardly anything about this movie. I couldn't find a wiki page on this movie. I can't find much information at all about this movie.
No.
So I don't have a lot of production. I don't have hardly anything on the cast other than names because they're all German actors. That's why I was thinking it may not take us too long to cover this one. Before we get into cast, if you don't have any productions, do you want to talk about scenes?
Scenes from this one, I would think, are the first scene that really got me as far as I was going, whoa, okay, was the giant hornet. The big freaking hornet on her head when she turned around, I went, what the? Whoa.
And it had multiple eyes, didn't it? Or maybe I'm thinking of the second.
It had three sets of compound eyes rather than just the two.
Yeah.
And
again, she's just a zombie out there moping around and that thing's on her head. Yeah.
Yeah. So they talk about over the winter and early spring, the family is depressed and the whole people avoid their farm and all of that. But when he finally goes to investigate mom, it's her dementia, because they say she went mad, seems to be just that she daydreams all the time. It's not that she's violent or says anything or does anything. She just always... he does that huge montage with her in a time lapse of her in the one room, just in different positions.
Yeah. That's a good scene, actually, that you mentioned it. And the photography in this movie is gorgeous. That shot behind me, I'm like, look at that. It looks like a painting.
Yeah.
And a lot of that has to do with the fact that it's in black and white, but a lot of it's also cinematography.
Yeah, black and white helps a lot for what he's done, but I also think it was probably bad marketing-wise. If your title is The Color Out of Space and it's all black and white, it kind of is. But I love the way he used that. So again, I would think that's, to me, the next two scenes I would mention are the very first time color, which is just in a normal landscape transition shot, establishing shot that he's been doing. And suddenly in the bottom right of it, you just see four or five fuchsia dots in the grass.
Yeah.
It's, and then that shot, and then right later there. On when he has the big field shot and he pulls back and pulls into the field, we have the picture behind you where you see them actually formed on the blade of grass sort of stuff. And then the only time he uses it is in bursts, like when it's glowing. And you see the color, and you see the color on people's faces.
Do they see it when they're looking inside the meteorite at the globule
no.
that they break? They don't see it? Okay.
Gosh, we see it move, but we see no color there. There's no color in this movie okay. until an hour into it.
Which is clearly a choice he made.
Yeah. But even the other shot you've got there from the meteor's point of view, looking up as they pull pieces off of it, is a cool directorial choice. So I do the way this movie is directed and shot.
I clearly think he has talent. I wish he would do more. It's when I talk about that other guy that did Ain't the Devil's Candy. He does one movie every 7 years. This guy's not done another movie.
But, my next scene would be the house exploration.
Okay.
When he goes in and has the scene with the father, and that's where you're getting all the quote lines like, Thaddeus lives in the well, or whoever lives in the well now.
Oh, when the father's clearly losing it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah. Yeah, for sure. And that's right before he goes upstairs, too, which is another scene, isn't it? Doesn't that precede the scene before he goes upstairs to see the mother locked in the room? And goes the mother upstairs. Now looks like this.
Yeah, which was great.
Yeah, she's huddled in a corner, and he picks up a broomstick or something and
he
taps
thinks she's
her.
Dead.
You think yeah. she's dead. And yeah. she gets up to move and then just disintegrates into the floor.
Yep.
And that's exactly how it was in the book. I was like, yep. oh my God, he is really doing this right. Because you think it's going to be a monster that comes after him. And it's just a corpse that's still alive, or at least animated by the color.
And the same thing happens to the father when he goes back down. He decays into the floor. Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy. Really inventive. It's Lovecraft, so it's going to be inventive. But it's always cool to see it translated to film, because you don't really picture Lovecraft in movies. It's hard. He's very descriptive, and his writing is not, you know,
it's also very
to screenplays.
It's also very internal monologue, very insular, very it's hard to do, because he's almost got he almost always has a single protagonist.
Yes, he also telling a story that's too horrible for you to hear.
And he also almost always has it's in past tense, so it's someone telling a story that happened to them to someone they know.
Yeah.
Sort of thing. But I do think that image that you have right there with this kind of basically a desiccated skull face with purple dripping out of the eyes kind of thing. That to me is cosmic horror. Says cosmic horror, which is what Lovecraft supposedly
that
invented.
And the whole fact that it's a meteor that comes down too.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's cool because we haven't really touched on cosmic horror, have we? At least not in a while.
Nope. No.
I don't think. And again, I think I'd have to do research. I don't think we've covered a Lovecraft since Reanimator.
Probably
From Beyond
not.
Is on the list, but we've not done it.
Okay.
But other things about this movie, the cast is good. It's got Jürgen Heimuller plays one of the scientists. He's a familiar face that I thought I may have seen in another movie. Michael Koch plays Armin, the older version of Armin. There's two versions of Armin, including the younger one who's behind me. That's all I put down for cast, because none of the others even had pictures in IMDb. They were just blank. This movie was not nominated for – oh, no, actually, I take that back. It was nominated for an award at a Lovecraft Film Festival in Portland in 2012. It won Best Adaptation. It's probably the only adaptation that year, I imagine. And that went to Juan for his directing. And it is not on the 1001 movies, and I don't think it should be. It's not that good. But I do like this film. I never told you my experience with it. I watched this movie about 10 years ago.
Oh, did you?
So I had known about it, and I was like, this is a really cool little movie. And then I saw that one with Nicolas Cage, and I was like, it would be interesting to pair those up and do them for an episode. And
yeah, I was going to ask you why you picked these two, because you didn't do Die, Monster, Die.
I've seen that recently. That movie's kind of hard to watch.
Okay.
It's a Boris Karloff one with really cheesy effects. But I may put that one in here for a solo one day, because it's not near as faithful as these two.
Yeah, I would say, again, and I think this came out in some research that I saw with a couple of reviews, I would say that if someone wanted to see an accurate adaptation of this short story, it would be this version, this particular version.
Yeah.
And it's very Lovecraftian. It feels odd. It makes you feel uncomfortable. It has a lengthy, huge exposition where you're just waiting for something to happen.
It's a slow burn. Yeah.
Yes. And when it finally does, it all goes bam, bam, so fast sort of thing. And you go, oh my gosh, I'm lucky I survived that feel. Did you watch it through the end of the credits and see that last little shot that he threw in, which I thought
I can't remember. What was
it? Well, two things. One, I also want to recommend, I also want to say that I really liked his use of music in this. There are times when there's 10, 15 minutes of no music whatsoever. It's only people talking or effects or whatever. And it made me uncomfortable because there was no music. There was no jarring thing underneath. Again, almost like a B-movie or a student film kind of feel to it that works, that worked in Evil Dead in places too. But no, as he's doing the ending credits, it's showing all this blackness and fog and some shots of the river, like the lake lapping on the shore and all that. And then that kind of goes away and you're hearing credit music and also sound effects. But you're also hearing a creaking, and near the very end of the credits, you suddenly realize that there's some lighter colors or lighter intensity to the black and white going on, and you realize you're looking at the boards of the well. And at the very end of it, you come up out of the well, and you look down the hill, and there's a whole city down there. Oh. And you just come up out of the way. And it was just that moment I went, okay, that was a really cool thing. I wonder if he did that on purpose, because it's that the whole feeling from the end of the book where he goes, it's still there. You don't understand. It didn't leave. It's still there.
I watched it on Plex, and Plex cut it off at the credits.
Of course they did.
And it pissed me off. So I went to borrow it from my library so I could watch the very end, and it kept being checked out and I couldn't get it. So I did not see the end of the credits.
But that's a really cool little shot that there's a hidden gem in there for everybody.
I've got a little bit of information on Juan, and then I guess we can move on, or we'll move on to Keys. This is trivia. He was born in Stuttgart, Germany in 1982. So it was right during the midst of all of before the wall came down. And so it was a tempestuous, is that the right word, time? I don't know. Before graduating from Stuttgart Media University, he did a film called Damnatus, based on the highly successful sci-fi tabletop game Warhammer 40,000. Have you heard of that?
Yeah, Warhammer 40,000K, 40K.
It was ultimately taken offline by Games Workshop, the owner of the IP, but not before gaining a considerable fan base. This caused a debate about the freedom of fan art and the limitations of international copyright laws, which was featured by the BBC and the University of Leeds. So he made a movie. He did make another movie, but it got yanked because he was stepping on somebody's copyright, apparently. And this was his second film based on this story, and won awards at international genre film festivals, blah, blah, blah. And that's it. That's the only information I can find about him at all.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah.
Maybe he just got fed up and now he's in real estate or stock.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know. Did you want to talk Keys?
Yeah, I just have a few for this one because I saved most of the ones for the next one.
Me too.
But Evil Dead was one of them. The other one that really struck me, especially at the beginning, the way he framed things and everything else, was Primer. It reminded me of that a lot, this intense close-ups of people. It's in black and white. The backgrounds look chaotic sometimes until he gets to the farm. So just stylistically, it kind of reminded me of Primer.
I just realized that I did my keys in an email and I forgot to send them to me. Hang on.
Oh, you need to send them to you.
Yeah, that was dumb of me.
Also, a lot of those CGI backgrounds at the beginning reminded me of those early 90s computer games we used to play, where it was, they would go to the video cutscene and it would be obviously a guy and a full computer, just in a computer office background. And the lighting didn't match. The depth of field didn't match. It was just, yeah, I just needed to have him. He's a detective. This is his detective's office kind of thing. And no, that's not it. That's a green screen. That's a flat wall.
Yeah. It's funny that you say Evil Dead because that was obviously filmed in Tennessee. I have another key that is closely related to us from a production in Tennessee.
Yes.
Called Dial M for Murder that we did and yeah. You directed that was mm-hmm. completely – the entire stage show was done in black and white and the only mm-hmm. color was the blood.
Yeah.
Which is – exactly what they do in this movie. The only color is from the substance outside of that meteorite.
True. True. Well, that's a good one. Yeah. We did
so
do it in monochrome.
That's a key to you.
Yeah.
Kind of. Or the Theater Guild.
I did that. Yeah.
And then I also have another very low budget movie that this movie reminded me a lot of, and that mm-hmm. is Night of the Living Dead.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah.
There are lots of scenes where you see an out-of-date car driving into frame that reminds me so much of the beginning of Night of the Living Dead and that them driving to the cemetery in that 1960s car. This is 1970s, but anyway. So, yeah, I got a lot of Night of the Living Dead. You could also say David Lynch because of the photography.
Oh, I've got definitely David Lynch.
Oh, I'm sorry. This is didn't mean to step on you.
No, this is a movie I think Lynch – like you said, this is a movie Lynch wishes he had made. I actually know because it makes too much sense. But because it does make sense. There's the plot flows. It works. There's strange imagery and strange stuff, but it makes sense to us.
Yeah.
I am curious, and one of the adaptation changes he did in this is this whole framing device of I'm looking for my dad. Because that's not in the story. In the story, he's a surveyor who's just there and finds out, wants to know why the land is corrupt. And he goes through this framing device of I'm trying to find him. I end up finding this guy who met him back when he served in the war and was here. But then we also have, at the very beginning, we see Dad at a lake and he throws himself in. Then we go through the whole movie. We finally come up to the very end, and he finds his dad wandering in the woods, picks him up, puts him in the car, and they drive off.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that was your framing device? Or was nothing happened?
Yeah, we don't know what happens. He takes his dad home, and his dad wanders around in a room until he desiccates and color comes out.
And color comes out his eyes again. Yeah, I don't know. What?
Yeah, I don't know. So I guess that's all I have to say about this one.
Yeah.
And we can probably move on to our second film, which is the 2019 version called Color Out of Space. I saw mm-hmm. this one actually when it came out as well on, I think, Netflix at the time. A brief synopsis is similar, but not exactly. When a glowing magenta meteorite crashes into the front yard of the Gardner family's remote home, it triggers terrifying cosmic nightmare. The parents, Nathan and Teresa, along with their three children, watch in horror as the mysterious object infects their groundwater and distorts reality itself. Plants mutate into iridescent terrors, time begins to loop, and the family's minds and bodies slowly warp into grotesque, fused hybrids. As the alien organism consumes the property, the Gardeners face a descent into madness, struggling to survive an otherworldly force that transforms their peaceful rural sanctuary.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've got a good bit about the production of this, the director in particular. I'm assuming you had never seen this movie.
No.
Okay. This is Richard Stanley's first movie since the catastrophe of a movie that he attempted to direct called Island of Dr. Moreau.
Yeah.
with Marlon Brando. That movie infamously went down the tubes because things got out of hand. He got fired. There is a wonderful documentary about it that I have seen that you really should see. It is a great movie where he literally snuck back onto the set of his movie now being directed by John Frankenheimer as an extra and watched what all was going on. And this, and it didn't get any better because Frankenheimer had his nose up Brando's ass too. I don't think Stanley worshipped Brando as much as Frankenheimer. He just let Brando manipulate, so to speak.
Yeah.
It's a nightmare. Anyway, Richard Stanley, he came on the scene in the 90s with a movie called Hardware. I've never seen it, but it's supposedly really good. It's a low-budget horror thriller, sci-fi horror thriller. He's from South Africa. After that, in 92, he did Dust Devil, which was another horror movie I heard about, never saw. And then the tragic 1996 version of The Island of Dr. Moreau. And then he just vanished until this film, which is unique. That's a key in itself because there's a mystery between the directors of both films.
And in doing research and everything else, because I did see Hardware. I remember watching it in the 90s, and it was not bad. Very Australian, but not bad. I actually ended up watching it because I had wanted to rent a thing called Hardware Wars, which was just a short film that was a parody of Star Wars.
I've seen that.
Yeah. But I got Hardware instead. And it was like, oh, okay, this is pretty good. It's, I think you would like it. It's pretty creepy. It's very violent.
Yeah, it got him noticed for sure.
And I saw Dust Devil too, but he was actually fired from Dust Devil as well.
Oh, was he?
Yeah.
Okay, so, he must not have a good reputation.
I'm not sure if he gets in over his head, if he wants to do stuff different, what it is. I don't know.
This was supposed to be the first of a trilogy of H.P. Lovecraft films he was doing, I think, since the plug has been pulled on all of them. But
yeah, because this was produced by Frodo. Elijah Wood.
Elijah Wood.
It's his company that funded this.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
What else? Oh, I do have that his next film is the upcoming Winnie the Pooh Blood and Honey. There was a Blood and Honey too.
I didn't even know there was either.
And then he's working on a film called Dunwich, which is about the Dunwich Horror, the H.P. Lovecraft story.
Okay.
We'll see if that ever comes to fruition. But I have some other notes on him. He's clearly a horror movie and literature fan. He has adapted material that includes Shadowland by Peter Straub, one of his favorite novels, The Damnation Game by Clive Barker, The Three Stigmata of Palmer Eldritch by Philip K. Dick, Flicker by Theodore Rozak, I guess that's how you say that, Cocaine Nights by J.G. Ballard, and The Great God Pan by Arthur Machen. And that's a great old story, The Great God Pan. It makes a lot of lists, being like one of the best horror stories ever written. Okay. So clearly Richard does his homework, but I think he must smoke a little too much dope or something. Something happens with these movies. And
I think part of it also may be his relationship with the cast. Maybe
I think
he is too. Maybe he is too self-indulgent and lets him do stuff. Because Cage goes off the deep end in a couple of scenes in this.
Oh, my God. Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking. I was like, Brando did it, and so does Cage.
And I know Cage really wanted to do this movie. He wanted to do a Lovecraft film. And so I know he was interested in and was a huge supporter of it. But that may have been to the detriment of the film almost. I do think aesthetically or in a broad strokes, adding the body horror element to this was a good, smart decision for now, for modern film, I think, because it's not just two different kinds of feelings in these two movies. The first one is much more atmospheric, much more slow burn, much more
Lovecraft.
Lovecraftian. I'm afraid of what I'm going to see around the corner kind of thing. This one is much more in your face, graphic, trying to be an amalgam of so many keys, of other films that you're going, okay, yeah, that I guess that may work for horror movies, maybe. But I do think they each have scary moments to them that work. I do love the cinematography in this movie. I love the fog. Yeah. I love the lighting. I love the colors. He's done some really good, I think, the makeup effects work in this movie.
It's just another reason why I wanted to pair these two movies, because they're vastly different. One is totally black and white, and one is totally color, man. The color in this movie is off the charts.
Boy, is it color. I mean.
Yeah.
Like you were saying right before we started recording, you said the color out of space, and obviously that color is fuchsia. Yeah.
In both films. It's that color in both films, really.
But any like the thing? Opening scene in this is great. The narration, the narration, and it's just those up angles in the woods looking at in a very foggy day.
And they actually quote the text. Yes.
Yes. So that was a good, one of my favorite scenes in it.
I didn't have any other production, so I was going to let you segue into scenes, and you have. The first scene that comes to my mind that absolutely sent me over the edge is when she's chopping those carrots. I was like, holy shit, she's got a sharp knife. She's going to cut her fingers off. And literally, she cuts the tips off two of them.
Yes.
Ooh.
Which, again, body horror, really creepy, does allow us kind of a breakup so we can separate the family in a way, but has no bearing on the rest of the script.
No.
We don't know why she did it. We don't know what it's
for. Oh, it's to make
the
parents disappear for almost 48 hours or something. I couldn't even tell how long they were gone. It was weird. It seemed like they left one night and came back the next night.
Correct. It was almost an entire 24-hour period.
Okay.
But it has no bearing on the rest of the plot. It's kind of like the whole girl is a Wiccan thing. Really has no bearing on the rest of the plot. Makes no difference one way or the other. Except we get another body horror scene, which is another one of my scenes. So I have chopping fingers, too. I also have girl with a box cutter.
Making real tattoos on her skin.
On her skin. Yeah, yeah. Spelling out, putting the runes on her skin. And if that had led to something, it would have been a really cool scene. But it doesn't matter one way
or the
other.
I think the whole theme was Wiccan magic doesn't work against extraterrestrial.
Okay. Yeah.
Or cancer.
That's an assumption we can make to begin with about cancer, too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And then the whole mom and son
fusion.
Fusion scenes. Not only the one on the sofa, but the one upstairs. And then mom attacking her. Jesus, that was good. That one was good.
To me, some of the effects just did not cut it.
Hey, they're better than From Beyond. Come on.
I don't know. The whole time I was watching it, I was like, Rob Bottin did this in 1982, and this does not look as good.
Oh, no. They want to be as good,
I know, and
but
it's practical. It's a practical effect. It's not CGI, and it's just not that good.
That's why it's only done in those really quick shots. Are you talking about the long shots with mom like lapping up water and
there's that, but there's also the fusion of the alpacas out in the barn looking like the dogs.
Oh, that's the thing. That's the thing.
Totally. It's a total key is the thing. But it's not done as well. And this is 43 years later, 44 years later or whatever.
Rob had a lot of time and a lot of money. Because they dumped money on him and he stayed there. He didn't, like that interview when we were doing the thing. He didn't even know he was supposed to leave, so he didn't. He just stayed, slept at the workshop. But let's see, what else? What other scenes do you have?
The scene with Nicolas Cage in the car.
Yeah.
I just made my dog bark.
I'm sure you did. Yeah, he goes off. It's a very... to me, there was actually a key that came from that. That's very Five Easy Pieces, Jack Nicholson.
He said that's what he used for inspiration. I read that.
Okay, well, then that too.
But it's not. It's also a key to himself in Moonstruck. They took my head.
So true.
Cage. And this is not the only movie we're doing of his this season, by the way.
Oh, great.
So just brace yourselves.
He has always been to me, I put him in the same category as Crispin Glover and Christopher Walken. There's just this unique eccentricity about them that they have moments and they're inspired and they're great and they're wonderful. And then they have other ones you're going, that is just the weirdest freaking choice I have ever thought of in my life. Why would you do that? So
I kind of put him in the Keanu Reeves category where he does really good movies sometimes. And you're like, how did he all of a sudden be really good in something and so terrible in other things? I was trying to think of, for instance, he did a movie called Pig that you need to see.
Okay.
And it's not a horror movie. It's more of a, almost more of a vengeance movie.
Okay.
But yeah, you should see that movie. Anyway, we can talk more about cast in a second, unless you're through doing scenes. Did you have any other scenes?
Another one I had was the taped narration, the Tommy Chong, Ezra hippie character who's obviously dead now, but he recorded the whole, and it actually explains everything. It's living everywhere. It's trying to create its environment here on Earth, blah, blah, blah. His narration, basically, for anybody who didn't get it, here you go. This is what's happening.
And it sounds like he's tripping or something.
Yeah, right before he died or got taken over or whatever. Although any of that doesn't explain the other earlier actions of the family, but neither does the short story or the other adaptation we talked about.
No.
We don't know why mom is suddenly acting the way she is. We don't know why dad is suddenly acting the way he is. We don't know why the boy is losing time. We don't know why Jack is talking to somebody in the well. Although that was a really cool scene. I liked all the scenes with Jack sitting and looking at the well, and slowly the flowers are starting to grow in different places and seeing more influence happen. I thought that was really well done. But
yeah, that's a little bit from the book, too. One of the kids ends up in the well in the book.
That's why both movies have the line where the father says, yeah, he lives in the well now.
Yeah, I was trying to think of some of the other similarities. There's more in the first movie, but it does attract lightning in the story. It does reduce in size and disappear in the story.
Yep.
Because it goes in the well. And
it does produce fruit that's an animal, fruit that's larger but inedible.
It's inedible. It tastes bad.
Starts mutating animals.
That's another scene where Nick goes overboard. When he's eating the tomatoes and just freaks out, starts throwing them, and his wife's looking at him like, what the fuck?
She's going, fix the internet. That's all I care
about. Yeah, fix the dish.
Fix the dish. It does have, it is told through a third person because we get the idea that Grant, or whatever his name is, the guy that is the hydrologist.
The one that the African-American guy from the very beginning when she's practicing Wicca by the lake. Yeah.
And the end, you do get the impression that he's the bookend, that he's the surveyor who's there and they're going to tell him the story sort of thing.
But I do think that, I guess you're right. I guess the body horror is not bad. It would have been better if the effects would have been better, though.
Yeah, I think they spent a lot on some CGI animation in places and color. And filters and color additions, and less on the practicals than they should have. They should have spent
more. And then some of the CGIs don't look good, though. Like that bug that flies out of the well, it doesn't. It looks kind of fake.
But it looks really good because it's a purple mantis with four eyes, which is really cool. It looks really cool. A mantis is my favorite insect.
It has a scorpion's tail, too.
Yeah. My favorite insect kind of mutated into something really nasty. So that's kind of cool.
Big time.
But yeah, I don't – it's like in my notes, in my watch notes, I go, this script started out really good and interesting, but degenerated about halfway through and really lost it by the end. Characters making decisions that make no sense whatsoever.
Yeah.
Like even the older son, oh, I just need to crawl in here and get the dog. Really? No. We just saw something really horrific. Dad shot mom in the forehead and our brother. Time we should leave. I don't think we need to call on the fucking look for the dog. That makes no sense. If he had a relationship with the dog before, it would have worked. But we only saw Jack have a relationship with the dog. The youngest boy, the dog kept coming and sitting beside him and protecting him. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that we saw, but we never saw Stoner Boy care about the dog one way or the other. He could barely take care of the llamas.
They're alpacas, David.
Oh, sorry. Alpacas. Something. It was a weird term. Yeah. Anyway.
If there's no more scenes, and the only other scene I can think of is at the end when all the color comes in and it's all crazy, like in this picture here.
Oh, I loved it. Yeah. I liked what they did. I like the, that's what I mean. They spent a lot of time on these optical effects of showing the color inside the skin and translucent and almost veining and stuff, or behind the eyes. And all of that, it was really cool and looked neat. But yeah, you do get into fuchsia world really quick.
Yeah.
In this.
Big time.
Yep.
All right. I'll move on to cast. Obviously, we've already talked a little bit about Nicolas Cage, who plays Nathan. We know him from Wild at Heart, The Rock, Face Off, Moonstruck, and that movie Pig that I mentioned. He is Francis Ford Coppola's nephew. And I think this is the first film we've done with him in it.
He doesn't do a lot of genre, so yeah, that makes sense.
But it is not, as I said earlier, going to be the last this season.
Okay.
He was attached to star in Richard Stanley's Dust Devil in 1992, prior to the project's collapse and him being replaced by another director. So you're right, he was fired from that.
Yeah. So, yeah, he doesn't have a good string of good films.
He doesn't. I need to send you that movie. It's great. I can't remember the name of it, but it's a documentary about the making of The Island of Dr. Moreau. Richardson plays Teresa, his wife. She has been on Nip Tuck. She's on that show, The Sandman, that we've watched. We last saw her on this podcast in Event Horizon.
Yep.
She is the daughter of Vanessa Redgrave, the granddaughter of Michael Redgrave, who we saw in The Others, the Screw adaptation. She is the niece of Lynn Redgrave and the sister of Natasha Richardson, who was the wife of Liam Neeson that died in that tragic skiing accident.
Yeah.
She's great. I was kind of surprised to see her in this.
I actually saw her in, she's in the last Downton Abbey movie, too. She's really good in it.
So. I don't know if I've seen the last one. But Madeline Arthur plays Lavinia, or Lavinie, I think they call her sometimes.
He calls her Vinnie, but her name is Lavinia.
Vinnie, yeah. She's great. I don't know anything really about her. But
no.
I thought she was good. She's got a great look.
She's got a great look. She's got great eyes. She made some really cool choices. I really liked her in this. And when I looked her up, I said, and I've not seen anything else she's done.
No, that's why I didn't put anything down. I had
any other title. Yeah.
The same with these other people. Elliot Knight plays Ward Phillips, hence Lovecraftian name, Charles Dexter Ward. Howard Phillips Lovecraft combined.
Oh, yeah.
It's not even subtle.
Lavinia is the girl in Dunwich Horror.
Okay.
So that's,
That's funny. Tommy Chong plays Ezra. He has been doing other movies besides Cheech and Chong movies I did not know. Like, he was in Zootopia, which I'm sure is a pretty good paycheck. Brendan Meyer plays Benny Gardner. That's the stoner older brother.
Yeah.
And all of these are kid actors, so you're not going to have a lot. But this one, Julian Hilliard, played Jack Gardner. Now, we have seen him in multiple things.
Yep.
Namely, he played young Luke in The Haunting of Hill House.
Yep.
Which I will always remember him in. He looks just like he does in that picture right behind me.
He looks exactly like this character. Yes.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. However, he went on to be in WandaVision as Billy, one of the kids. So he's doing pretty high, probably more high profile than anyone else in this cast.
Yeah, pretty much.
He is still working and looks totally different now, by the way. He's like a young adult, and he looks totally different without the glasses.
from a sci-fi perspective, I will say Brendan Meyer, the Benny the Stoner character.
Okay.
He is in another series that a lot of people really, I don't personally, but a lot of people do, called The OA.
I've heard of it. Which was a
two-season science fiction European series, which was highly rated by a lot of people. It's on a lot of people's lists.
Okay. And then last, well, not lastly, I've got two more. Josh C. Waller played Sheriff Pierce. I've got him in here because he was a producer of the movie Mandy. And that's another psychedelic, crazy horror movie with Nicolas Cage in it that I have on the list. We just have not covered it.
That came out right before this, right?
I think so. They came out almost at the same time. But the other reason why I have Josh C. Waller in is he was a I mentioned he produced Mandy. Guess what else he produced?
I don't know.
A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah. So I'm like, this guy is playing a part, but he's really a producer, and he's doing some pretty good stuff. So I thought that was interesting.
Yeah.
And then Koryanka Kilcher played Mayor Tuma. She was Jenny in The Life of Chuck, as well as being a regular on Yellowstone. She looks very Native American.
Yes.
But I think she's of a different nationality. I can't remember. Anyway, she played Mayor Tuma. Awards. The Saturns nominated this for Best Indie. The screenplay nominated – It was not nominated for that many. It was nominated for Best Indie as a Saturn Award. It was nominated for Best Screenplay in the Bram Stoker Awards. It also was awarded or nominated for screenplay at the Sitka Festival, the Toronto Festival, and Fangoria gave it a win for Best Limited Release and Special Effects. So it won some awards. It was nominated for a few on the circuit, just across the indie circuit. It is not on the 1001 Movies You Must See, and I can understand why. Probably mainly because of Nicolas Cage.
Maybe.
I don't know. I don't want to hate on him because he's not as bad as – I don't think he's as bad as Tom Cruise, honestly. Anything else trivia-wise before we move on to Keys?
I did – in doing some research, especially on IMDb, they have an entire list of – scenes that are deleted from this.
Oh, and
it
cool.
made me curious to get the DVD or to see if I could find them because some of them sound really good. Just a glance at them. There's two more big scenes with Mayor Tuma. There's a big scene with Ezra where he talks about for 23 years before he retired, he was an electrical lineman in the area and he's been exposed to so much radiation. He thinks he glows in the dark. So all of, and he also talks about panspermia and meteors or life bringers, religious origins of meteors. So there's a lot of contextual stuff that might have been very Lovecraftian feel to it that seems to have been cut from this.
Okay.
So I'd be curious to see the extended version or those, at least those deleted scenes.
It's 4 hours long. I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
I've got that he stated in a Q&A that this would be a planned trilogy along with Dunwich Horror, and maybe he doesn't say the other one.
I know Dunwich was their second one they were going to do, but they bailed after this movie didn't.
Yeah, it says Spectre Vision severed all professional relations with Stanley in March of 2021 following domestic abuse allegations made by his former partner, Scarlett Armouris.
Who is credited with co-writing this screenplay.
Yes,
yeah.
Resulting in a cancellation of the planned trilogy. He wrote an unproduced biopic of H.P. Lovecraft called Providence.
Okay.
Of course, we've not seen it because it's unproduced. However, I found this very funny, and this explains his connection with Cage. It says Nicolas Cage and Richard Stanley both conducted independent research expeditions searching for the Holy Grail prior to their involvement in this production.
Sure. After National Treasure, he wanted to do a Holy Grail movie, maybe?
I don't know. I just think it's funny. I think these sometimes I think these dudes are just smoking a little too much weed. I don't know.
And I agree. I think this movie fell apart halfway through, and not that it's totally unwatchable. It finishes the story, so to speak, and has some genuine scares to it, but I don't think it necessarily preserves the Lovecraft feel.
No,
the first one did.
The first one is more Lovecraft. This is more midnight cult movie.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I should have known, Tim, because when I first watched it, it said a Shudder original.
I think I saw it originally on Netflix before I had Shudder.
Actually, correction, it said the first title says a Shudder exclusive. So they bought it.
Yeah, bought rights to it. They do that all the time. Keys.
Oh my God. We've said it all the way through. The first major key for this has to be the short story that inspired both of these films and other adaptations that are out there. But the first two I wrote down in this one were From Beyond and The Blob. The Blob, because something comes out of a meteorite and it's kind of purpley reddish colored and starts attacking everybody. And From Beyond, because it has these kind of weird mutation special makeup effects that don't really work. That aren't the best. You're going, you were almost there, but you ain't no Rob Bottin, I just tell you.
No, not at all. And the From Beyond looks like the mother-kid hybrid thing.
Yes.
Because it's very rubbery looking.
Yes.
Yeah.
I would think you could also credit all of Gordon's stuff. Reanimator, too, because it has that same kind of, all the same references. Mescatonic University, well, Providence.
There's a connection just because Stuart Gordon's really the only other person that has done multiple Lovecraft films.
Yeah, true.
Yeah.
True.
I have Evil Dead again, and the reason I have it this time is those shots of the house with the lights blasting out and the wind blowing the fog by. I'm like, that's the exact same shot. It's just a different house.
Yep. Very true. All the nighttime shots with the fog.
You've been watching some Sam Raimi, Mr. Stanley.
I have The Ring just because of the well and the well becoming such a an object of terror for it, you know, especially Jack sitting there watching it, and then they just keep showing those shots of it just by itself, and you're going, is something going to crawl out of it? Is something going to happen?
Yeah, a long-haired girl.
Yeah. I have Signs. This one reminded me a lot of Signs, not so much the last one. Yeah, the whole family thinks that there's something weird going on in the fields and blah, blah, blah. The whole family dichotomy breaking apart and them almost turning on each other because of this fear factor that's out there.
Yeah, I could see Signs. I also see a little bit of Spielberg in that as well.
Yeah.
Family dynamic.
The use of color and some, like almost like Close Encounters, the gold light shining through the keyhole kind of thing. They do that with the light in this a lot.
Yeah. I have Amityville Horror.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
Not only is it Get Out territory, but they also want to rescue the dog.
No, it makes no sense. I said the same thing about Amityville, though, too. Don't go get the dog. What are you mad? I've got just some other references, which key references kind of thing. You already mentioned Charles Dexter Ward. His name is Ward. Lavinia is from Dunwich. Her book is The Necronomicon, of course, which is the book that Lovecraft created. Grant is wearing a sweatshirt that says Mescatonic University on it. They mentioned Providence twice, which is actually on his tombstone, I think. I think I remember reading that. That he actually has I Am Providence or something like that on his tombstone.
Maybe. In case we didn't get it on the record, I put The Thing because a lot of this is like a big ripoff of The Thing.
Especially the alpacas in the barn.
I don't know what it is, but it's weird and pissed off.
Yeah. And we have to shoot it. We have to shoot at it.
We have to kill them because they're humane.
Yeah. I have The Shining just because there are times when you feel like Cage is trying to imitate Nicholson.
Well, that's funny because I actually took this out of IMDb and Nicholas Cage drew inspiration from Jack Nicholson's performance in Five Easy Pieces, particularly the car freakout scene for this film. So I want some chicken salad sandwich. Hold the chicken salad.
I want between your legs. Yeah. But no, when he does those quick, abrupt shifts after the, and then a momentary lapse of muscular coordination.
This is very Nicholson.
I have Annihilation. That was actually more of a science fiction-y kind of feel film, but it has a lot of the elements of this movie and the short story.
With the weird plant stuff, yes.
It's like a bubble that they have to enter, so it's an area that's consumed by this alien presence.
It's Florida. It's a big chunk of Florida.
But it changes the environment. It turns bears into zombie bears, all that kind of stuff. So there's a lot of...
Plants grow in the shape of humans and stuff.
It's and weird. They're searching for people that have disappeared.
The thing is, though, is that Alex Garner is a much better director.
Yes, much better. Oh, yeah. I've got one I haven't heard of. I found in research. It's a 1987 adaptation of Color Out of Space called The Curse.
Oh, that's the one with David Keith.
Oh, okay. No, I've
never seen that, but I have not seen that movie since the 80s, and we are not big fans of David Keith. I forgot about that one. We should pair that one up with the Die Monster Die. That would be great. That'd be like two really bad ones.
Let's do that.
I had not even thought about The Curse. Okay, let me put that in my keys. I'm going to write that down because that is an adaptation. It was like the early 80s, I want to say. Mid 80s, maybe.
I had two Stephen King ones, which I bet you have already.
You're probably going to say Creepshow.
No. Oh, yeah. I was going to say Jordy Verrill. Yeah. Creepshow.
Yeah.
Which, again, a meteor lands and starts doing weird things to the vegetation and takes over.
I think King would tell you out front that, I ripped off H.P. Lovecraft for that story. Or it's an homage to him. Yeah.
Which is my second one. He said it was heavily inspired by Color Out of Space, Tommyknockers. Except it's not a meteorite. It's a spaceship.
Yeah. They dig it up. It's buried. Yeah.
But it starts affecting them. It affects the plants. They start getting.
I don't remember it affecting plants, but I remember them building weird contraptions and using battery power.
Yeah. And having monsters come out their buttholes and stuff. Yeah.
No. That's Dreamcatcher. That's a different story.
Okay. But still, Tommyknockers and Dreamcatcher. I put both of them out there.
Yeah. But Tommyknockers came out in 1986, Dreamcatcher came out in 1000.
Yeah. He just needed more rent that day, I think.
So actually, no. Actually, Dreamcatcher came out in the 90s, late 90s.
Okay.
So they're a good bit apart. Yeah. Dreamcatcher, that's a strange story. It's got a shit weasel in it.
A shit weasel.
That's what he called it, a shit weasel.
Yeah, you're right. I have... I have another movie. It came out, I'm not sure what year, a few years ago, but it's called The Endless. It's on my list, but I haven't seen it yet.
I think I have seen that. What is that about?
I think it's two or three people who fled a cult.
Yes, and then they go back. That's a great movie. That's those two guys that direct sci-fi movies that I told you need to watch. That is a great movie. It's on my list.
Yeah, it's on my list.
They're caught in a time. There's a time loop in it. Oh man, that's a great movie.
Yeah, but the references I got in doing the research were having to go back to a location that supposedly has bad connotations to it, and it's actually got sci-fi elements and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, that movie is awesome. They also star in it, and they have directed other movies, including a very Lovecraftian one set in Italy about a guy that falls in love with a sea monster. And it's really good, too. I cannot think of the name of it, but I did it for a genre topic several years back.
Okay.
Yeah, those two guys went on to start doing, I want to say Marvel or Star Wars. They're like working for the big dogs now.
Okay.
And they started off with independent sci-fi. Yeah. Definitely check that out.
I don't think we mentioned it. We talked about it, I think, pre-call. There's a television or an HBO series that's inspired by Lovecraft.
It's called Lovecraft Country.
Yeah.
And that's based on a book that I've read.
Oh, okay.
I've not seen the show, though. It's set in Jim Crow South.
Okay. With meteorites?
I don't think so, but it's definitely Lovecraftian, and it's definitely a predominantly African-American cast of characters. And it was weird. I was like, why is this a Lovecraft story? And then I started realizing, okay, it's okay. I would like to see the series. I would.
I have one last key, which never ever occurred to me, but I found it on IMDb. And when I saw it, I thought of you.
Oh.
Because it is X-Files. Because which one? When they show the clock and he loses time and it shows the clock, it's 11:21. When he comes back to, or that's 11:21 when it starts. He comes back at 4 or something or whatever when he loses time that time.
Oh, and it's an X-Files homage because they use time a lot.
They used 11:21. It had some significance to Chris Carter.
It's usually like November 21st, but.
Yeah. It's his birthday or something.
Somebody's birthday.
Yep.
Wow.
What about you? More keys? You got more keys?
I don't have any more keys. I think my last one was you know what? I did have one thing, but it's nothing that you haven't already talked about. You were talking about all the references to H.P. Lovecraft stories. There is actually a character of Ezra in the story, The Case of Charles Dexter Ward. Ezra's a name he lifted from books, too.
Yeah.
I think Richard Stanley, when he was a teenager, smoked a lot of dope and read a lot of Lovecraft.
I think so, too. Yeah. And naming him Nathan, I thought was a good adaptation, sort of thing. So that works. And I don't necessarily know they needed to change the gender of one of the kids. I don't think it had any effect on the story whatsoever in one way or the other. I also don't think a lot of their actions near the end of it made any sense. So,
but there were two boys in the...
Three boys.
Oh, so it originally was three boys. Now it's two boys and a girl. Okay, gotcha.
Yep.
Because I remember there were brothers in the black and white.
Yeah, because the one brother goes to the well, the other brother disappears, the other brother goes crazy, and he puts him upstairs with mom, sort of thing. So in this one, they join mom and the brother together.
And when I went back and reread the story, the mother was in one room and the boy was in another.
Yeah.
Yeah, the father just kept locking him away because he couldn't kill him. He just didn't know what to do with him.
Yeah, but anyway, that's what Tim and I think. We would love to know what you think.
Sorry, so I was tripping. I had a flashback.
Let us know in those comments down below. Did you like either of these particular films? Did you like what we thought about it? What do you think of what we thought, sort of thing? If you like what you've been watching and everything else, we'd love to hear from you. Leave us a comment down below or give us a review, any of that kind of stuff. And or if you want to help us and support us a little bit, keep doing this. We've got a Patreon where you can get some stuff for free, but for a little bitty tiny amount a month, you can get some special content, including other podcasts we've done, one covering Star Trek, the original series, and another covering X-Files, which we even mentioned as one of our keys. But until next time, Tim, we're going to go somewhere fun next time. What are we doing next time?
What are we doing next time?
I don't know, but I hope it's not got Nicolas Cage in it, ideally. But
it could potentially be worse.
Oh, great. Can't wait.
We are actually going to do another. We're going to do a sci-fi. I teased that this was sci-fi horror, but it really fell in my category. Next week is sci-fi, and it is something we have not done since we did The Night Stalker. And it is a television show, not a theatrical release movie, and it is from the 80s.
So that means you guys should come back and watch or listen to us if you want. Yeah. Tim, until then, I guess we'll see you then.
All right. I will see you then.
All right.
Bye.